overall, I was just extremely happy that I did it. I met a ton of great people, and I had a set of instructors which were very special people to me because I'd known them all before. I actually lined up a lot of them before I even opened the place while I was still thinking about it. And they bought into the model. And now that we've closed, I see some of them teaching at other places. Matter of fact, I was with one last night, and she said, we had 20 bikes, and where she is has like 30, 35 in a smaller room. And she says, it's like claustrophobia in here compared to NSYNC. So all of those things made me feel really good.
This is Amy, the Senior Group Fitness Instructor at the Indoor Cycle Instructor Podcast. Are you looking for a spark of inspiration to bring to your next class? Find us at indoorcycleinstructor.com.
It's a sad day here at the Indoor Cycle Instructor Podcast. Hi, I'm John McGowan, and one of the early studio startups that grew out of some of our early podcasts where we were talking about, you know, the potential for opening a studio. And we had a lot of people come to our first ICI Pro Conference. And from that, NSYNC Cycle began. It was led by instructor, entrepreneur, Charles Hiltgartner, more affectionately known as Spook. And he has chosen to close his studio. When I heard about that, I thought, oh, that's really sad. But then I thought, you know, he may have some ideas or experiences that he can share that would help you to potentially thrive with your studio. So Spook is joining me from Maryland. Spook, welcome.
Morning, John. How are you?
I'm really well.
Good.
I'm really well. And I'm sad about your studio.
Well, it's the right time for me. I am 70 years old, still teaching, and I have grandkids that I want to go out and watch play ball, and I want to start coaching again. And having a studio and being the only person that works it doesn't provide that kind of time. And the business in the area has changed. There's more studios. There's gyms with bigger biking rooms, and every day a new little gym pops up here or there. And it's not that people totally leave you, but they start to say, instead of coming three times a week, I'm going to do good CrossFit, or I'm going to do something else one day a week. And over time that takes its toll.
Interesting. Okay. So let's give everybody just a little bit of background first. What was your initial motivation to start a studio?
I wanted to own my own business. And then after that, I started looking around, and as you said before, I listened to a podcast on there talking about how to open a studio with Bill Pryor out of Boston. And so I thought about this for a while and talked with Bill. We had great conversations, and I learned a lot from him because I came out of the technology business. I have No, I'm just a cycling instructor. I'm not a fitness guru. So Bill and I talked. He told me what to start looking for. And then after a while, he provided me with some information, and I started looking for places. And this was early 2010 through the summer. Towards the end of the summer, I have some granddaughters that live in Colorado. They were here visiting us, and I was headed back to at that time, I was working for a school to a technology conference, and we took them back. And the day before we left, my wife and I were having breakfast, and she had always known I was kind of playing around with this idea, but she wasn't quite sure how deep I was into it. And I told her.
This is going on in the background that you're not actually disclosing it.
Yeah, not yet. So I told her what I've been doing. And went into it with her, and she had lots of questions, which the reason I didn't tell her is because I know my wife likes to drill right down to the pennies. And
how are you going to do this?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, Amy's the exact same way.
And so I needed to have more answers ready to go for her. She at first was kind of 50-50 And when I presented to her a tentative possible schedule, now I still had a full-time job at this point. We had a 9:30 class, and she said, how are you going to open that up? How are you going to get that started? And I said, well, I haven't figured that one out yet. And then next day later, she said, well, how about trying our daughter-in-law? And at that point, and my daughter-in-law didn't have a job, at that point, I knew she was into the studio. So from that point on, we opened in February of 2011, and we closed just recently on May the 3rd. It has been a really neat experience. I do not regret what I have done. For me, it was much more of a retirement job because I stopped working about a year after we opened, a little less than that. There were lots of things I could have done differently, which we'll probably talk about later. But overall, I was just extremely happy that I did it. I met a ton of great people. And I had a set of instructors, which were very special people to me because I'd known them all before. I actually lined up a lot of them before I even opened the place while I was still thinking about it. And they bought into the model. And now that we've closed, I see some of them teaching in other places. As a matter of fact, I was with one last night, and she said, we had 20 bikes, and where she is has like 30, 35 in a smaller room. And she says, like claustrophobia in here compared to NSYNC. So all of those things made me feel really good. And so I miss the people. Right now I'm trying to rearrange my life because I'm essentially fully retired. But that ain't going to happen because I'm going to start coaching and I have a little job at a bike store a couple days a week. So I'm trying to find a new balance of scheduling. So that's where we are right now.
If you had to do it over again, I'm presuming that you would, but what would you have done differently?
Well, first off, I don't think my wife would let me do it again. Okay. And you know, quite frankly, I'm not sure I would do it again at my age, but if I did have to do it over again, the first thing I would have is a partner. For 3 years, I opened every class. And it's not because the instructors wouldn't have done it. It's because I didn't want them to do it. I want them to come in and teach your class, and then leave. They don't have to keep track of how many people are in class. Just meet the people, become friends with them, create relationships, and go. And I'll send you a check at the end of the month. So to have a partner meant you wouldn't have to be there. I was out of that studio 10 days in 3 years.
Got it. So it got a little wearing.
Yeah, it got a wearing. But, you know, I had lots of free time today. We had a 9:30 class, and then we didn't have one till 4 o'clock in the afternoon or something like that. So I had free time to do things. Okay.
Let me slow you down.
Sorry.
Let me just to finish this point. Would have having some kind of desk help, would that have solved the problem?
Maybe not. Other than the fact is I like doing that. You know, I like going in and greeting the people and seeing them and getting to know them and knowing who their kids are and knowing that their husbands are healthy or, you know, whatever. That's probably the thing I do best of all is schmooze with people, get to know them. So having help, obviously having help would have been nice. But because of the financial situation, this was really a retirement job for me. I was mostly interested in the write-offs. But yes, that certainly would have helped my sanity of getting some time away from the place, but I couldn't afford it.
So, got it. So, which is the kind of that chicken or the egg thing?
You got that one. That's why a partner would have been very important. And a partner would have allowed us to expand as well.
Explain that.
Well, we were in a very small facility with 20 bikes. At our peak, we probably could have added another half a dozen bikes, but there wasn't really room in the place. The other thing is that I saw with a lot of new studios that were opening, it wasn't just cycling. Cycling was your base, but they were also putting a little room on the side to do some yoga or to do some Pilates or do TRX or whatever. So the concept of having one facility with multiple fitness opportunities for people seems to me to be a really good way to go. At the end of the day, the real way to do it is to have one facility with me as a cycling owner, somebody else is a Pilates owner, somebody else a yoga owner, and share the space and share a front desk. That to me would be a great model, but you got to find those other three people who are going to hang in and do it and that you're very compatible with.
So dual purpose, is that what I'm hearing?
Dual purpose facility, and not huge and not so it looks like a gym. You know, you walk in, there's a front desk, you go over in this area, it's your cycling and you don't see anything else. So it's all, you know, it still gives you that private boutique feeling. And we heard that a lot from people coming in.
Got it. You know, that's interesting. That's the model at OM Power in San Francisco.
Right.
Or OM Power, I guess they call it. And where ICG had their headquarters here until we lost our friend Jim.
Right.
And, you know, I can see that as working. They had two distinct rooms, but they share the same infrastructure.
Right.
And
I mean, I've heard of even bigger ones than that where – there's a bicycle shop right in the middle of it, you know, and there's a coffee shop right there. So, but that now you're into a step up in a different world.
Correct. I understand. Okay. Spook, describe for me what you would see as the two complementary personalities of a partnership.
I think one like myself who likes to deal with the people, who likes to cycle, obviously, who likes to take care of the place. Like I did all the maintenance on our bikes. Now, Kaisers don't have a lot of maintenance to them, but what was needed, what was there. And I took care of the place, you know, made sure the bathrooms were clean, all that sort of stuff. The other person is somebody who's a really good marketing type, who can write grabbing marketing. I wrote a lot of stuff for our website and a lot of emails that we sent out, and they had good things in them. But they weren't that grabbing marketing advertising that you really need. The ones that hit the slightly below the gray area, and I'll give you an example of it. I see stuff as come into a cycling class and lose 50 pounds in 6 weeks. Well, you don't do that strictly biking. You need other things about it.
Yeah.
So I can't say that. I mean, I had people walk in. I had a woman walk in there. She must have been 350 pounds. She said, I came to lose weight. And I said, you're not going to lose it here like that. I mean, you lose some. You know what I'm talking about. You know, you're going to look. It's healthy for you to be doing this, but you need to do other things. Mm-hmm. So there's that gray area that if you look at gyms and the advertising and the marketing they do, it becomes very powerful. And I guess I'm just too honest. So.
Right.
That's another person that you need who can write well. I'm a lousy writer. I'll bet I didn't put out one email that didn't have at least one typo in it. So,
great. Well, that makes two of us. Although, just to clarify, what we're not looking for, you're not saying that you need one honest partner and one dishonest partner.
No, absolutely.
But one that's willing that can sell the dream.
Yes, that has that. I can sit down and talk to people and do that, but I can't do it in writing.
Got it. Okay. All right. And.
The other thing,
so just to put a finer point on that, and I can hear my wife Amy talking about it because we're very similar. Where there's a big picture person, and then a in the trenches kind of person.
Yep,
which is what I hear you describing.
You got it.
You're doing the nuts and bolts. The other person is more visionary, more creative, more.
Except on the other side of that, I don't mean to interrupt you. I love to look at the big picture, and I love to dream, but it's the implementation of it. That on paper, in pictures and all that sort of stuff.
Correct. And that's kind of where I was going with this is that big picture people don't get bogged down in how you're going to do that. Sounds like you and your wife are that way.
Yes.
Between the two of you, you're big picture. She's okay. Well, I need to understand exactly how you're going to accomplish that.
Yeah.
That's the way Amy and I are. Yeah. I have this, we're going to do all this. And have you thought about this? Well, no, not yet. Just like you were explaining, which is good because you're complimentary at that point.
Yes. Okay. Absolutely, John. Absolutely. Okay.
So you would have had a partner. What else would you have done differently?
I'd have had more subs, instructor subs. Before I started the business, I taught at this club and I saw many of the instructors there who were outstanding instructors. And I said to them, hey, if I ever open a club, will you come come teach for me. And of course, they all said, sure, Spook, we'll come teach for you. Well, then all of a sudden I opened and I said, are you ready? And by God, most of them came. And these were outstanding people. At some point, I expected them to draw people from their other club, from the club they were teaching in. That doesn't happen a whole lot. You'll get a few that come up there first off. But when you get attached to a club, it's tough to get people away. So most of the business we were getting was from new people. But what happened over time is that you have these great instructors, and they're all teaching in many places, and then you need a sub for one of them takes off for the summer. You need a sub for the summer. So now you got to run around and find one, or you end up doing all the classes. One moves out to South Carolina, and I'm telling you exactly what's happening to us, too, or what happened to us. She was a person that filled every class she taught. Another one goes to Europe for 3 years on a sabbatical for the Belgium government or something. Another one who was a yoga person and someone who could stretch, had her own business called the Flexible Warrior. She went with the Baltimore Ravens football team to stretch players all season long. So now you better have a stable of subs who are just as good as the beginning ones. And I didn't have that. So I'm reaching for some people and finding some people. Luckily, I found two that were outstanding. And so it didn't work out the way I wanted it to, and I should have had more. So that's my fault for not getting out there and getting to other clubs and talking to people about subs. I just kind of assumed that these guys would be with me forever. So that was an issue. The other was is your location. I'm in an area in a small shopping center, and it's a nice place. It's a fairly affluent area, not the most affluent, but on the road across from me, between where I was and the 83 Expressway, which goes between Baltimore and York, Pennsylvania, between those two, it was all businesses. This is where the marketing comes in. I wasn't very good in going in and hunting business stand. I'd walk in, leave my stuff, be cheerful, talk to the receptionist, hope you can get this around. And I'd leave and think, well, that's it. And that's not a marketing person knows how to get into those places. So we're back to what we talked about before in marketing. So they're the kind of things that I would do differently. And I think that at the end of the day, they added to the reason I got out of the business.
Got it. Okay. How did you go about recruiting the instructors that you had?
Well, most of them initially I knew. Actually, I knew every one of them, and I had taught with them at a couple different clubs. I knew them all, and they were all very good. Once we got going, I picked up a couple more. One used to come in with her sister and cycle, and she said, oh, I'm an instructor. And I said, well, why don't you come teach with us or try us out? And she said, okay. So she came in, and over time, she became one of the top ones. I had another one, a gal from Colorado, used to teach out there. She joined us, and she was very good, but then she moved downtown and just couldn't do it anymore. So you pick up people from in the club I don't want to say club, but in the studio, who share with you that they've been instructors before. And having been there as just a person coming to cycle with us, they get to understand the place, and they buy into it. Now you call up Mary Smith or Bill Jones down the road and say, hey, how'd you like to come teach with us, come on out and audition a class. They don't have a sense of the club itself. They come in, they teach their class and leave. Everybody that we had pretty much initially and some of these ones I added bought into the studio as a studio and not as a big club. And I think that's extremely important.
Because they are different, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they're very different. They're very different. And now having gone back to a club, I'm finding things that I miss. On the other hand, the clubs have showers. We didn't. And
was that a mistake?
Now, I don't. When you look at the big picture, I don't think so, because we were very small. With 20 bikes, how many showers do you put in? Let's say you put two in, and you're set up enough. You have enough room, which I didn't have, that both men and women can use either one of them. And I don't mean to pick on the women, but let's say you have five men and five women taking showers and women getting there first. I guarantee you they're going to take a lot longer than the guys. So,
well, typically they're going to be in different rooms, so you'd have to have two each.
Yeah. So it's just it didn't work because you know, most of the people in the area would come in, they'd cycle, and they'd go home and take their showers in the morning or in the evening. They didn't bother. So there weren't many people that said, boy, I can't come here because – no, I shouldn't say that because we didn't get a lot of 6 a.m. business because of that. But nobody really came in and complained about it. Oh, you should have showers. They all said you should have showers, but nobody really complained about it. But that certainly was an issue with this with the 6 a.m. classes. We never did really well with those. We kept them going for convenience sake and because I like the instructor too.
Got it. Okay, so if somebody came to you, Spook, and said, okay, and I realize you have experience starting a studio, and you know, experience is often a combination of things you did right and things you did wrong. What would you beyond the things that we've discussed? What else would you kind of advise them on?
I think the one is, be prepared for the summer. These are in no order. They're just kind of coming to my head. But be prepared for the summer because in a studio, if you're in a reasonably affluent area, your summer is going to drop off much more than a club would. You know, people are going to Maine. They're going to the beach. They're going to – I had one lady went to Italy and Tuscany for half the summer. So you're going to see a lot of drop off, a lot of golfers, that sort of stuff. So be prepared for the summer, which means you have to have a bigger base than what I did. You know, I had probably 1600 people on my mailing list, of which probably four of them were family and friends that never showed up. But you need a big base. So I just continue to market. We use Living Social off and on. We use Groupon off and on. They're only good for a couple of times. So it's continue to build your base of people coming in there. However you can do that, that would be one big thing. The other is, again, as I said, the instructors, look at your space, make sure you have some room for expansion. Our space was a typical retail store in a shopping center, which is long and narrow. I really wasn't thrilled with that, but at the end of the day, it was the best I could find. And then just keep the place neat and clean and ready to go. You know, so when people walk in, the bikes are ready, the instructors are ready, the AV equipment and the sound system is working. And by the way, if anybody wants to buy a used sound system, I have one for sale. So
awesome. How would they contact you?
Spook@insyncycle.com.
Okay. And I'll have your link to your email post. Okay.
Great.
Well, you know, in taking the, you know, the 100-foot view on this, it sounds as if what you're saying is that you have to be prepared for the long haul.
Yes.
And, you know, I've talked to a lot of people either considering or in the process of or having opened a studio. And my impression is that their thinking is a little too optimistic as to how quickly things are going to ramp up. Is that consistent with what you experienced?
Yeah, I think so. Other than I ramped up very quickly. And then, I mean, early 2013, I was having the biggest months I had. And then all of a sudden this brick box, this gym down the street opened up with a cycling room of 70 bikes, all Kaisers, $50 a month membership. Now, obviously I'm not competing against that on a dollar figure. And they had good instructors, a lot of RPM, which people like. So you got to be prepared for those things, and that's why the base is so big.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. Was there anything that you could have done to be prepared for a competitor, or, you know, strategically?
Well, I did do one thing. I repainted the studio. It was we were just kind of a plain gray with two sidewalls that were red, and I just repainted the place, and it was kind of cool looking. People really liked it, but there's nothing you can do other than make sure you have a larger and larger base. The one thing that I did late in the game, because of some issues with the consumer protection, and anybody going into a studio needs to look at the consumer protection rules of your state, because they differ from state to state.
Oh, yes. Explain that. I've completely forgotten to ask you about that.
The consumer protection wants to protect people from a club opening getting a yearly fee of $1,000, we'll say, and with a $200 initiation fee, and then closing in 6 months or 2 months, and you're out of money. And that evidently was happening a while ago. So the consumer protection says if you collect money in advance that applies to more than 3 months, you need to have a bond for all those liabilities. And you need to have an accountant who authenticates that bond periodically. That gets expensive because bonds aren't cheap. Plus the registration fee is $1,500. I had some out there. So what I immediately did was moved everything back to within 3 months. Now you don't have to need a bond. At the other end of that, if you collected the money every day as people come in there, then all you need is a $75 registration fee and nothing to worry about. So I pushed everything back to 3 months. I also started with some monthly unlimiteds, which I didn't really want to do because they sound too much like a club billing. But I did that anyway. I think that kind of hurt us a little bit because I had a number of people that were buying ride cards out to 6 months and some to a year for $600-$700. So I had to back all that down and consider that. Also, that was in one of the considerations when we closed how that was set up. So that's something that they didn't find me until September of last year, September of 2012. And I kept putting them off and putting them off. And it wasn't 12, it was 13. September 13, kept putting them off because eventually I knew it was going to close this and I didn't want to get into it. So you need to look at that. You need to really look at the legalities and the government taxes and all that sort of stuff surrounding a small business. And we are truly small businesses. And you know, you hear that on the radio, small business as well. They're a lot bigger than we are. And it's the personal property tax. It's this, it's that, and that, and that, and this, and that. And so it'll drive you crazy. I was in business for a long time before the consumer protection. And I know there's other clubs around that have small boutiques like me who they've never heard from. So all this occurred, the club down the street opening at the same time, the consumer protection, it all occurred at the same time. And I'm sorry that it did at that time because I may have kept going. I don't know.
Anyway. Got it. But it just got to be a little too much.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I wanted to do some other things and it was time for me to go. And I have no regrets, as I said that before. Right now, I'm a little kind of out of sync. My wife is very sad because she now has to pay for spending someplace. But what I did, you know, when we closed, let me talk about closing for a minute. When we closed, I told my instructors 3.5 months before we closed. I said, we're going to close. And one of the things they said, you know, all of us as instructors who are in the fitness industry sometimes think about or dream about owning our own place. They said, but you did it, and that's amazing. And I really appreciate those comments. They put together a YouTube presentation that was really very cool the day we closed. But anyway, 3 months out, that gave me time to make sure everybody got their rides in, as many as possible. I only had two people. One was in Florida, and another lady had been sick for a long time who came back and said, hey, can I get my money back for the rides I didn't take? And I absolutely paid them right away. So the 3 months, and then what happened was a friend of mine said, hey, what's plan B? I said, what do you mean plan B? He said, well, your business is going to drop off after that first month. So month one will be okay. Month two, it's going to go right down the tubes. And by three, you may not have anything. He was absolutely right. So we went to plan B and we ended up closing in 2 months. But we got all those rides in. Nobody complained. We had a party at the end, which was a lot of fun. And so we went out in kind of in style. And a lot of the instructors came back. We had a class and all of them talked. We had some food and some beer. And it worked out really good. From a leasing standpoint, since I knew in late 13 that this was in the works, I went to them and said, listen, there's a possibility within 6 months I'm either going to close, I'm going to sell the place, or I'm going to move to a different location. Can you, because my lease was up in December, can you put me on a month-to-month for that period of time? And they said, okay. So that was really good too. So that's the party was, and it's over.
It's over, and it's sad.
Yeah, but, it is. You know, there's a Dr. Seuss phrase. I'm sure we all know who Dr. Seuss says. It says, don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. And I think that's the way a lot of people felt. That's the way I wanted them to feel. So it was a great run.
We'll leave it at that. Spook, good luck to you.
John, I thank you very much for having me on, and I will look forward to continually being a part of the Indoor Cycling Instructor and in Petalon as well. So awesome. Thank you. You do a great job, man.
I appreciate that. Okay. Thank you.
All right, John.